the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
As Joss mentioned, we will be returning to those words from Psalm 62 in our time of prayer later in the service. But for the next few minutes, we're going to turn our attention to the second reading for this evening. As the title for this evening's talk reminds us, here is Jesus' invitation to rest, as found in Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now, I'm sure many of you are familiar with Jonathan Swift's four-part satirical novel Gulliver's Travels, written almost 300 years ago. In his first adventure, we read that Lemuel Gulliver is the only survivor of a shipwreck. He finds himself washed up on the shore of the land of Lilliput, where he is tied up by people who are less than 6 inches tall. And one of my favourite scenes within the story is where the Lilliputians think that because Gulliver keeps checking his clock, it must be his god. And this scene is Swift's very clever commentary on the worship of time and hurry and efficiency, something which he observed in his day. Something I think that would apply just as easily for many people today, since by Lilliputian logic, your god is your smartphone. But the reality is, of course, that neither you nor I can control time. Every time we find ourselves having to wait. Rarely does a day go by without our patience being tested because we have been forced to wait. And we find waiting often frustrating and unnecessary. We don't like to find ourselves in situations where we are not in control. And yet there is a sense in which we as Christians are a people defined by waiting. We live in liminal time, in the now and not yet of God's kingdom. Christ has come and will come again. In the meantime, we wait. However, rather than developing habits that respect this rhythm, I, like so many others, I'm sure, choose habits often of impatience, where we try to squeeze more things into our already cluttered days. So how is it possible to live as those who watch and wait for the coming kingdom when we can barely wait for the kettle to boil? The Catholic theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar, writing during the mid-20th century, talks about our willingness to watch and wait. In his book, The Theology of History, he writes this: patience is the basic constituent of Christianity, the power to wait, to persevere, to hold out, to endure to the end, not to transcend one's own limitations, not to force issues by playing the hero, but to practice the virtue that lies beyond heroism, the meekness of the lamb which is led. All sin consists essentially in breaking out of time. Hence, the restoration of order by the Son of God had to be the annulment of that premature snatching at knowledge, the beating down of the hand outstretched towards eternity, the repentant return from a false, swift transfer of eternity to a true, slow confinement in time. Christ has come and will come again. In the meantime, we wait. Which is why I'm convinced that there is something very important for us to discover through observing the rhythms of the liturgical year, rhythms marked out for us through narrative. Every week we reenact God's creative work and rest through Sabbath, as Gemma reminded us last Sunday evening. And every year we retell the story of Jesus. Advent, Christmas, Epiphany. The story of God's people waiting and watching for the Messiah, a rescuer, a story that leads towards partial fulfillment through Christ's birth and through the unfolding story of Revelation, an epiphany of recognition that here is God's King. And then there's Lent, Easter and Pentecost, the story of Christ's temptation, of life lived within a fallen world, suffering death, resurrection and ascension, and the coming of the Holy Spirit to empower God's people. And within the rhythm of the liturgical year, there is no celebration without preparation. We aren't ready to celebrate until we acknowledge through our worship, both as individuals and corporately, that we and this world are not yet right and whole. And so as we prepare, we practice the discipline of waiting. And through it, we embrace the tension of our lived experience that the kingdom of God is both now and not yet. Christ has come and will come again. In the meantime, we wait. Dorothy Bass, writing in her book Receiving the Day, says this: "Our problem with time is a spiritual one that runs right to the core of who we are as human beings. We come to believe that we, not God, are the masters of time. We come to believe that our worth must be proved by the way we spend our hours, and that our ultimate safety depends on our own good management. But in truth, time doesn't revolve around me. It revolves around God, what he has done, what he is doing, and what he will do. And it's our recognition of that reality that draws us towards Christ. He invites us to spend time with him, to watch and wait." In 2010, in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, the Serbian-born artist Marina Abramović personally curated a piece of performance art. The installation was called "The Artist is Present." The piece consisted simply of Abramović seated at a table. Onlookers were invited to become part of the exhibit by coming into the performance space and sit opposite the artist, gaze into her eyes for as long as they wished before moving on. The performance continued all day, every day, for 3 months. Many gallery visitors found the experience profoundly moving. Peter Bradshaw, writing a review for The Guardian, commented that this event has something real to say. In our daily lives, we never stop for long enough to look intently into someone else's face. The mysterious primal seat of personality and identity. Which links us back to our verse from Matthew's Gospel. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." So Christ's invitation to his disciples is to watch and wait, to set aside time, to turn and come to me, to recognise that rest is not a substitute for worship, it is part of our worship. In the context of the narrative in Matthew's Gospel, the injunction to those listening relates specifically to the legalism and heavily controlled constraints placed upon the people by the overzealous Pharisees. If we were to flip on a few pages later in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus records a rebuke of legalism and rule-keeping. Talking about the Pharisees, Jesus says, "Do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy, cumbersome loads and put them on other people's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them." That's Matthew 23, verses 3 and 4. And in marked contrast, read again those verses that we've read from Matthew 11. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." And the two words that form the phrase "weary and burdened" are closely linked together. The first word, "weary," is the effect. The second word, "burdened," is the cause. And we can instantly see the close link with Jesus' words from chapter 23. The word for burdened is fortizo, which means to load, as when placing a load upon the back of an ox. The word is used in the perfect tense, a tense that describes past actions that are related to or continue on into the present. And whilst we must be careful to read these words in the context that they were written, there is a very clear application for our lives today. In part, the burden of law-keeping as stipulated by the Pharisees came about through a limited acceptance of God's grace, believing that they themselves, and by extension all of God's people, needed to work hard at securing God's favour and his salvation through the discipline of law-keeping. The word for weary is kupeo, which means to expend great effort in hard and disagreeable work to the point of exhaustion. The word is used in the present continuous tense, and so it highlights the fruitlessness of self-reliance, which only leads to frustration and exhaustion, mentally, physically, and spiritually. And Jesus' solution to the problem is a relational invitation. It's simply, "Come to me." It's a reminder to all of us that the artist is present, and that we are invited to sit, watch, and wait, and rest. The following injunction is to "take my yoke upon you and learn from me." Now the word for "take" is aero, which means to take on oneself what has already been lifted in order to carry it. The word is in the aorist imperative tense, which represents a decision. So within the context of both Matthew 23 and Matthew 11, we see a transaction taking place. Notice how that the heavy, cumbersome loads put on the other people's shoulders by the Pharisees in Matthew 22 is now replaced by the lighter burden of following Christ. The word for learn is manthano, which means to learn by inquiry and use, to acquire the habit of and be accustomed to. The word is a verb, which is used in the continuous present tense. So this is the process of discipleship. Here is the journey of growth and Christ-like change. In his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, by the writer John Mark Comer, which I would warmly recommend to you, he has this to say about Christ's yoke. Like every rabbi of his day, Jesus had two things. First, he had a yoke, not a literal yoke. He was a teacher, not a farmer. But a yoke was a common idiom in the first century for a rabbi's way of teaching the Torah. But it was also more. It was his setting of teachings on how to be human, his way to shoulder the at times crippling weight of life, of marriage, divorce, prayer, money, sex, conflict, resolution, government, all of it. Jesus describes his yoke as easy and his burden as light. But we mustn't misconstrue his words or in any way trivialise them, since we need to hold them in very healthy tension with Jesus' words that occur later in the same gospel. Matthew 16, verses 24, 26, we read this. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? And what can anyone give in exchange for their soul?" But the tension is somewhat eased when we consider the root meanings of the words that Jesus uses to describe his yoke in chapter 11. The word for easy is krestos, which means useful. That which fills a need and is well suited. The word for light is elaphros, which means agile, not overbearing. So what does it mean to take Christ's yoke? It simply means to submit to him, to put ourselves under his leading, to join together with him, to be his yoke mate, to not forfeit their soul, but instead to find rest for your soul. Comer goes on to say this. Secondly, Jesus had apprentices. In Hebrew, the word is talmid. It's usually translated as disciples, but an even better word to capture the idea behind talmidim is apprentices. To be one of Jesus' talmidim is to be apprenticed under Jesus. Put simply, to organise your life around three basic goals. Be with Jesus, become like Jesus, do what he would do, if he were you. Being yoked to Christ provides direction and purpose, and because of Christ's work, we wait with expectation. We replace the despair, frustration, and futility we so often experienced whilst waiting with the hope of salvation. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church in Rome, has this to say about waiting patiently. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is not hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. John Mark Comer again says this, the whole point of apprenticeship is to model all of your life after Jesus, and in doing so to recover your soul, to have the warped part of you put back into shape. And the phrase rest for your soul in Matthew 11 borrows a lot etymologically from the Greek word soteria, a word that we most commonly find translated into English interchangeably as salvation or healing. So recognising that reveals the importance of Jesus' invitation to rest. It's not simply a moment to take a breath. Instead, it's an invitation to reorientate our whole lives in a present, continuous way through taking hold of the opportunity, because for us, The artist is present and available. We only have to watch and wait. In his exploration of the early church father Tertullian, Robert Wilkin highlights the relationship between patience and hope. He writes, "The singular mark of patience is not endurance or fortitude, but hope. To be impatient is to live without hope. Patience is grounded in the resurrection. It is life orientated towards a future that is God's doing." Now, I've never been one for giving something up for Lent, which probably says more about me, of course, than it does about the discipline we often attach to this period of preparation. But that said, I am quite disciplined in my reading, choosing to include a book or set of readings designed to act as a guide throughout the 40 days of Lent. As has already been mentioned, this teaching series loosely based on a book written by Sam and Sarah Hargreaves, who were with us quite recently on a Sunday morning, called The Rest is Worship. And a book that fits in really well with this period of expectation within, because it has 40 days of reflections. Personally, I'm reading a book entitled Tarry a While, written by Selena Stone. The subtitle of the book is Wisdom from Black Spirituality for People of Faith. And in it, Stone encourages us to answer yes to the question that Jesus asked his disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane, "Will you tarry here and watch with me?" Stone speaks about the practice of tarrying. She says this, "A collective time of waiting on God involving people from all groupings of age, class, gender, ethnicity, physicality or status. It recognizes the interdependence of the individual and the community for encounter with God. Tarrying is important for all of us who live with desire, loss, weakness, temptation, frustration, disappointment, and fear. It provides us with space to face our creatureliness, our struggles, our humanity, our mortality. As we sit in the presence of God who looks upon us with delight, we find ourselves tarrying with and for one who is familiar with our weaknesses." As we draw this part of our time together to a close, I'd like to finish with Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of Matthew 11, 18 to 20. This is what he writes in The Message. "Are you tired, worn out, burnt out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." Now, before Paul comes to lead us in a time of prayer, I'd like us to take a moment to collectively watch and wait. And to help us do that, we're going to listen to some words and music from the Taizé community entitled Stay With Me.